Hello, welcome to the Law Report. Damien Carrick with you. It's no secret that the family law system has its problems.
Personally, when I'm hearing a case at first instance or on appeal, it sickens me when I have litigants coming before the court that have been in the court system for 4, 5 or 6 years. They should have been out a lot earlier with our help. It troubles me greatly that over 50% of cases in many registries are over a year old. It really troubles me that over 25 to 30% in some registries are over 3 years old. That is simply not good enough.
Chief Justice of the Family Court, William Ostergren. He's also Chief Judge of the Federal Circuit Court.
I believe, leaving aside other debates and what else might happen, that together, through internal changes and changes that we can be supported with the profession with, we can make a real difference. A difference where people come out of our court system in 6 or 12 months, not 2 or 3 years. They come out ready to go on with the rest of their lives where they're not too embittered, where family violence hasn't increased because they've been in our system too long.
At a gathering at the Australian Institute of Family Studies last week, Chief Justice Ostergren outlined what he's doing to improve the efficiency of the family law courts. The measures include harmonising the rules and procedures across both the family court and the Federal Circuit Court, also identifying and supporting families where there is family violence, and making it easier for unrepresented litigants to navigate the system.
These initiatives, and indeed the system, is significant. It's significant because the system has to change. It has to change because it's not coping with the volume of work we've got. It has to change because we are unable to reach parenting matters as quickly as we should, and litigants are spending inordinate amounts of money on property cases which are almost disproportionate to what they're fighting over. Some of that is because the litigants will only have it that way. There's not much you can do about it, as we know. Others are because they've perhaps become a bit misguided or entrenched, and there's things we can do about it.
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate my thanks to the Chief Justice. Very interesting.
Following Chief Justice Ostergren's address, I hosted a discussion on fixing our family law system. Here are some of the highlights from that discussion, held before a packed audience at the Australian Institute of Family Studies.
The family court system looks set for a major shake-up. Immediately following the federal election, returning Attorney General Christian Porter announced that his highest priority will be structural reform to the family law courts. His stated goal is to ensure families, quote, have their matters dealt with as quickly, efficiently and as cheaply as possible. Running alongside the federal government's restated commitment to reform, we also, of course, have the Australian Law Reform Commission's recent inquiry into the family law system. Its final report, titled Family Law for the Future, was tabled in Parliament April the 30th, and it's 573 pages long and it contains 60 recommendations. In this conversation, I'm joined by Wendy Kayla Thompson from Forte Lawyers. She's the immediate past chair of the Family Law Section of the Law Council of Australia, Angela Lynch, CEO of the Women's Legal Service in Queensland, and Anne Hollands, Director of the Australian Institute of Family Studies, which is, of course, hosting this discussion. I want to start by asking our panellists, what's the biggest problem or the biggest flaw with the system? Wendy Kayla Thompson?
Well, I've been a family lawyer practising for 25 years and I've never seen the system, and I mean the broad system, not just the court, in such a state of crisis. And I think that all parts of the family law sector would say that the biggest problem is funding. So we have a court that has been, two courts that have been chronically underfunded for a decade. It means that there aren't enough judicial resources, there aren't enough family consultants, there isn't enough legal aid, there isn't enough support for community legal centres to enable people to get a timely and also a just outcome. One of the things that concerns me is it's not just about how quickly people get through the system, it's also that they get a fair outcome.
Yours is an impassioned plea for funding. People are always going to be asking for more money. What's the cohort of people who find themselves having their matters finalised in a family court or a federal circuit court? Angela Lynch, who are the people who get to the pointy end of this?
Well, I think the Australian Law Reform Commission made that pretty clear in the statistics at the beginning of the report. 54% of litigants have their allegations of physical violence. 85% identify a history of emotional abuse. So this is a domestic violence court. Whether people like it or not, whether they don't want that to be the case or not, it is. And we need to change, fundamentally change, how we respond to those issues. Because when there's domestic violence, and of course then there's added complexities of mental health and substance abuse, and what happens when there is domestic violence is those added complexities actually make it more and more high risk.
So given that the people who are having their matters ultimately determined by the family court are a pretty complex cohort, I guess there's a question as to what extent are the problems and the solutions faced by troubled families best dealt with by this family law system? Anne Hollands.
Well, I think the problems are solvable, but I think that the system that we have isn't fit for purpose. I think that's what we're saying. This system, which sits alongside many other systems, by the way, that families with complex needs are engaging with, doesn't actually protect children and adults from harm. I think that's the point that Angela's making there. But it also doesn't help people early enough in the process. There's something wrong that so many people are settling on the steps of the court, and the excessive costs and time that goes into that. I mean, I think that the system should be able to help people earlier on upstream.
But it doesn't.
It doesn't, not enough.
Why not?
I mean, I don't think we've got it right. I think a lot of the time and attention and, frankly, the funding that we do have goes into the pointy end. It's a very expensive portion. It has to be done properly. The governance of that 5% that end up in the court has to be done properly. But then what are we doing for the 95% who could be helped in a more skillful way earlier, where issues like violence could be addressed in a more skillful way earlier? And the other complex issues, which, by the way, most families that go through the system are complex. They're complex in a whole lot of other ways, not to do with necessarily with violence. These are relational issues. And the legal system is premised on the idea that people can make rational decisions. And yet, these are relational issues. People are disoriented. They're in turmoil. We're not approaching this in a multidisciplinary fashion early enough. We've kind of got it the wrong way around.
We've been talking about money, right? And you're making a plea for more money at the front end. Well, Wendy Kayla Thompson's making a plea for more money at the court end.
I'm also making a plea for using the money more effectively that we do have.
Given, and I'm mindful that I'm talking to a room full of lawyers, but they make a good living out of this, some of them. Do they have a vested interest in keeping the status quo? I mean, do lawyers have a responsibility to just kind of rethink things, take a hard look at the structures and maybe embrace radical reform? Wendy Kayla Thompson.
I think that family lawyers have got a long history over four decades of doing that. Family lawyers were the first amongst all of the areas of the legal profession to embrace mediation. We've been doing it for a really long time. What we know, and I know when I talk to my clients, I want to do the best thing for them. And it's incredibly disheartening to be trying to act for a client and they're faced with systemic delays in the system where they're going to run out of money and they end up having to accept a parenting arrangement that within their heart they know is not in the best interests of the children, but they don't have the money to be able to continue the fight.
Okay, let's talk about court structures. So right now we have the Family Court and we have the Federal Circuit Court, and they both currently hear family law disputes. Now, before the federal election in early April, the Federal Attorney General unsuccessfully attempted to pass legislation through the Senate that would have combined both courts, the Family Court and the Federal Circuit Court. The argument of government was that, look, this would just be infinitely more efficient. It would create a single point of entry into the family law system, one set of rules and procedures, economies of scale. Surely it's a good idea. Wendy Kayla Thompson.
Well, I think the family law profession and a whole range of other people involved in the sector agree that there has to be change, just not that change.
What do you see as the problem with that bill?
So the problem with the bill is that it reduces specialisation in family law, and those of us who work in the area know that specialist judges do the best job for families. And it also was based on a six-week desktop review by a large firm of accountants about what was efficient. It didn't actually talk to the people who work in the industry, and it didn't, importantly, talk to the users of the system, the clients. It was founded really on what we would say is a false set of statistics aimed at abolishing a specialist family court in Australia. And the Family Court of Australia is held up around the world as really what other countries are trying to strive for. And this would have meant the abolition, effectively, of the family court.
Why? Why would it have meant the abolition? Because it would just have been merged, these two courts?
Well, it wasn't actually a merger. The two courts would still remain under one banner. But effectively, what the attorney announced was that he would no longer make any more appointments to the family court, to the specialist division. The bills provided that appeals in family law matters would no longer be heard by the specialist appeal division of the family court. They would go off to the federal court and be dealt with by people who have no background or experience in family law. There was also an emphasis on the rules and procedures of the Federal Circuit Court. So at the moment what happens is the most complex of cases are typically dealt with in the family court, and those cases that are less complex are dealt with in the Federal Circuit Court. And there was a suggestion by the accountants that the Federal Circuit Court was more efficient, something that I would take issue with, but even if it was correct, it was founded on an assumption that the Federal Circuit Court could do the more complex work at the same rate that they were doing the less complex work. And it just doesn't work like that.
The Australian Law Reform Commission is recommending consideration of a much, much more radical change. The idea that the family law jurisdiction could really devolve back to the states and territories. What would be the advantages and disadvantages of that, Angela Lynch? I mean, I think the argument would be that you'd have all matters relevant to a family heard in the one court, so family law, family violence, child protection, because at the moment these are being heard in separate courts, local courts, and then the family law issues in the family court. This would be a way of bringing everything into the one courthouse. Good idea?
Yeah, it is certainly an attractive idea. Case management-wise, you can see perhaps one family with having one judge dealing with the whole matter in relation to the different laws before them.
Because presumably you must have clients who are pulling their hair out because they're having their family violence matters and child welfare matters heard in local courts and children's courts, and then their family law issues in Federal Circuit Court or the family court. It must be very difficult for your clients.
Absolutely. However, there are concerns, and we can't get away from the fact that we are in a federal system. And I just don't know the political reality of how long this is going to take. Is this a 20-year plan? Our clients need assistance now. They are in crisis now. Are we going to be devoting resources to something that in the end is not really ever going to come off? And you have to look at the political reality of premiers around the states and territories. Are they actually going to say, we have child protection on the front page of the Courier Mail every week? Every other week, I have the Courier Mail is dealing with domestic violence and the failings in that system. Am I seriously also going to be taking on politically also the family law system? Perhaps they will, but I question that. The other real concern I have from a domestic violence perspective is the culture of the family court, which is about cooperative parenting overtaking the safety focus of a domestic violence court. So if you have a one court model and you have the one court all together, I suppose that issue of ongoing cooperative care, which is what the family law promotes at the moment, could take away from the domestic violence legislation when you're applying for a domestic violence protection order and things of that nature.
But isn't the problem at the moment that you do have these two kind of competing courts with different agendas? So don't you need to somehow integrate them and integrate both their values?
Yeah, look, that would be great if priority was given to safety.
Anne Hollins, you're nodding there.
Yeah, look, I think Angela makes some really good points there, but I'd just like to introduce two other thoughts. One is from a person's perspective. If we take a person-centred view, it makes a lot of sense that they're not having to navigate the different systems. But more importantly, if you've ever been in a situation of doing a systems analysis of what happens when the child dies, these child death review matters. And, you know, I recently had an opportunity to see one where you look at the system touch points that that family went through and the opportunities that would have been there for someone in some system to act, and the family court was part of that. A systems analysis, and we're not hearing enough about that in terms of these reforms, will tell you that you've got to take that broader view and not just talk about the family law system as an isolated silo. It's not good enough in terms of keeping people safe. We have to go broader and look at the broader set of systems that people are dealing with.
And integrate those systems, though, right?
Well, I think there's a lot in that.
You're listening to The Law Report on ABC RN. Today, a conversation recorded at the Australian Institute of Family Studies. My guests are Wendy Kaler-Thompson, who's the immediate past chair of the Family Law Section of the Law Council of Australia, Angela Lynch, CEO of the Women's Legal Service Queensland, and Anne Hollands, director of the Australian Institute of Family Studies. This is a time of high emotion, I think, in the family court. There are 60 recommendations in the Australian Law Reform Commission's report, and we can't talk about all of them. There are a number of recommendations that centre on building accountability and transparency, and one of them is about judicial appointments. And it goes something along the lines of, when you are considering appointing a judge who will be working in family law, you need to consider their experience and skills in family law. There has been a trend recently to appoint judges to the Family Court and the Federal Circuit Court who don't have expertise in family law. Wendy, Angela, how widespread have these sorts of appointments been?
I think probably in recent times, relatively widespread. It's a section of the Family Law Act that requires that judges appointed to the Family Court must have a background, I'm paraphrasing, in family law. One of my concerns about the ALRC recommendation, whilst I really welcome the idea that we look at family law background of Federal Circuit Court judges, is that it takes away the mandatory nature of that.
How important is that in your view?
I think it's absolutely essential. No one is saying that judges who don't come from family law background are not great lawyers and who can't exercise their powers as judges. But from my client's perspective, when they come to court, they don't want to be told that the person that they're making a decision about their family has no background in family law. They don't want to know that.
And how many recent appointments have been of people who don't have that in-depth year-on-year-out experience in family law?
Quite a number. Some have had no family law experience.
And are your concerns around perceptions or are your concerns around outcomes?
Oh, absolutely about outcomes. So what we know already is that we've had a long time now of the Federal Circuit Court where some of the judges appointed to the Federal Circuit Court by successive governments have had significant family law backgrounds, which is fantastic, but there are many who haven't. And what we know is some of the outcomes have been less than optimal for families, more appeals from those judges, people settling on the door of the court because they're told by their lawyers, I can't guarantee you what's going to happen before this judge.
They're unpredictable.
Absolutely unpredictable. In a fantastically well-resourced system, we may well be able to cope with that. But in a system where people have waited 3 years for a final hearing before a judge and spent a lot of money, they want a predictable result.
So you're saying people shouldn't be learning on the job?
I suppose I am saying that, yes. I mean, we just don't have that luxury at the moment. And I frankly think that families in Australia deserve better than that.
Angela Lynch?
Yeah, I agree with what Wendy said. And the other issue is, this is a domestic violence court. There is high risk issues. Women and children, they are turning to this court at the most dangerous time of their life, which is separation. We have one woman a week continue to be killed in Australia because of domestic violence. And this court plays a role in relation to that. So we need expert judges there who are able to pick up on the red flag signals in relation to concerns about the safety of women and children in that court. We absolutely need them.
There's certainly disquiet within the ranks of the judiciary. A few months ago in a farewell speech, Brisbane-based family court judge Peter Murphy had some very harsh words. He took aim at what he described as, quote, finger puppet appointments. And he said, quote, merit is observable. It is not found refracted through the prism of party political favours. I'm going to play devil's advocate, right?
Surely there are advantages in bringing people who have a fresh approach, fresh skills. They don't have the blinkers on. People who've been in the family law game for many, many years will only have it one way of doing things or a limited way of doing things. Maybe there are other forms of experience and expertise which could be brought to this field. How would you respond to that?
I think that we do have some really successful judges in the family law courts who have not come strictly from a family law background, but who have come from a legal background in other jurisdictions where the similar skills are needed. So, for instance, lawyers who come from a crime background, who've been used to dealing day-to-day with issues of violence, they've been dealing directly with litigants who directly deal with the court, not corporations, have been successful. But it's a very different thing if you've spent your whole legal career acting for corporate organisations. You've never met a victim of family violence before. You've never met a perpetrator of family violence before. You don't know about the intricacies of drug abuse and misuse. And the nuance of people's behaviour, I think that's the interesting thing, is that in the community people expect that people who've got a drug addiction will behave in a certain way. It's not always the case. There's lots, often nuances to their behaviour, and the system is much more efficient and much more responsive to the needs of families when you've got a judicial officer who understands those nuances. Now, when people are legally represented, there's a bit of protection, but for the people who are unrepresented, there is no protection for them.
I wasn't there, I didn't hear him, but it sounds like Family Court Judge Peter Murphy was white hot with anger. Are they emotions that you have come across in your dealings with your colleagues?
I think that it's fair to say that the last 18 months have been a deeply political and divided period. It's actually been quite unifying, actually, for the family law profession. We've gone back to our roots and remembered why it is that we do this work and why we love it and what's important to the people that we act for. Some of the comments that His Honour made, I think, should be seen in a broader context, because there was also other debate about political appointments to other courts and tribunals, not just the family court. But I think there is a sense that particularly the coalition government does not pay proper heed to how vital it is to have a specialised family court, how lucky we've been in Australia to have that, and how we have to nurture it, and how important that is for Australian families. And so for people who've dedicated their lives to family law, it's pretty difficult to take, and I think that's where the anger comes from.
Difficult to take, angry, Angela Lynch.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, I suppose, the attack on family law specialisation, and politicians certainly have said that to me. They've used those phrases of fresh eyes and things like that in relation to the system. I mean, perhaps it's time for a federal judicial commission where we have some independence and transparency and accountability in relation to appointments, because people can always argue when appointments are made from either side of politics that that's a political appointment or something of that nature. So to take away from that, set up some sort of independent process, you know, so those arguments can't be made.
Mm. In relation to children's matters, the ALRC recommends the replacement of the presumption in favour of equal shared parental responsibility with a presumption of joint decision-making about major long-term issues. Wendy, Angela, briefly, do you welcome that recommendation?
Yeah, we certainly do. It's an absolute disaster for families where there is domestic violence, and it has been a disaster for children in Australia.
It was just a presumption. I mean, people weren't getting equal time.
Well, I think the problem is that as lawyers, we know what a presumption is.
Right.
But for lay people, they presume that that is the outcome.
Okay, so there was a mismatch between what the general population's understanding was about what they were going to get from the court, which was this presumption to consider equal shared time, as opposed to what was actually happening in the courts. And you're saying that's where the problem was.
Certainly, we have lots of research on this, that it led to families negotiating outside of the court system for equal time in situations where it clearly was not in the children's best interests. Victims of family violence being bullied and harassed into equal time because the perpetrators would say that that is what the law is. And, you know, to be fair, there were even professionals in the early days, lawyers, judges, mediators, who also thought that's what the law meant.
Anne Hollands.
Oh, just remembering back to when the first family relationship centres were set up. I think I opened the very first one in 2006. And immediately we started to have clients coming in saying, my lawyer has sent me here to get my 50-50. I've been out of the system for a while in terms of a service provision, but I, you know, that certainly was, for those first few years, it was very much that 50-50 time.
And those family relationship centres were set up to provide people with generalised advice and help them resolve their own issues, right?
Mediation, screening for domestic violence, child protection, mental health issues, all of those things were done and are still done in the family relationship centres.
And people would come under the misapprehension because they thought that this was the state of the
world. Well, the presumption, yes. So, you know, a lot of work had to be done early on to try and explain what the presumption actually means. I think there was a lot of misconceptions.
I want to wrap up very quickly. What is the one major change you think would improve outcomes for those who have family law disputes? Anne Hollands.
Well, I think the first and foremost issue, of course, is that we're assessing for risk and managing risk more effectively than we are now. I mean, you have to do that first. You have to do it well. The more that you can strengthen the capability upstream and then all the way along, the more able you're going to be able to do that.
Angela Lynch.
I really would like to see, and there was investment in it a number of years ago in a pilot, in a domestic violence specialist mediation approach that could take place in FRCs with lawyers involved and other professionals involved. So an investment, it's not something that's cheap, but it's cheaper than litigation, and actually try to start to stop some of these families or direct them away from the court. Some of them ultimately may have to end up in court, but it's a way of giving them some real opportunity and putting some resources around them outside the court to see if we can get some good resolutions. And I'd also like to see a domestic violence specialist pathway pilot set up in the family court, developing some domestic violence expertise in relation to advocacy, judgments, different ways of doing things and making decisions earlier.
Wendy Kaler-Thompson.
I'm going to suggest something that's not legally based at all, and that is I would love to see a community campaign that helps educate people about what separation means, what the impact of their conflict can mean for their children, what the impact of family violence is on their children. I think that one of our difficulties is that people separate and they have a lack of emotional regulation. They have so many issues in their own lives, they become so focused on themselves that they forget about the impact of their behaviour on their children, and that we could do more to educate people early on rather than that education happening to them when they come before a judge.
I'm afraid that that's all we have time for today. You've given us a lot to think about, so thank you very much for a fascinating conversation. Wendy Kaler-Thompson from Forte Lawyers, immediate past chair of the Family Law Section of the Law Council of Australia, Anne Hollands, director of the Australian Institute of Family Studies, and Angela Lynch, CEO of the Women's Legal Service Queensland. Would you please help me thank our guests?
That's the Law Report for this week. A big thank you to producer Anita Barrow and also to sound engineer Selwyn Cousins. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next time with more Law.